The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
President Biden announced the Israel-Lebanon ceasefire agreement yesterday. The IDF continued its missile strikes on Lebanon right up to the deadline for the truce. Overnight, the peace agreement finally came into effect. But what is the mood in Lebanon this morning, and what are displaced civilians returning home to? Joining me now is Sally Hayden, Irish Times correspondent who's currently in Beirut. And in a moment, we'll be talking to Professor Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. But first of all, Sally, good morning.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Now, yesterday, many of our listeners have felt concern for you because the stress was apparent as the bombardment of Beirut continued, and you were having to move here, there and yon to avoid the Israeli bombardment. What is the atmosphere like today?
Yeah, I mean, so that bombardment continued right up until about 4 a.m. when the ceasefire came into force, and the change is just, you know, astonishing. People are out on the streets. I was just in Dahiye, the southern suburbs. There's people playing music, you know, going around on motorbikes in cars, their whole families just celebrating. I saw someone handing out sweets. Just very happy. But at the same stage, it's very bittersweet because obviously there's been so much destruction. I saw one family crammed into a car who were obviously trying to head home. And they were all crying. The mother, I assume she was a mother, was crying, you know, my son, we're going home without you. And I assume that he had died. You know, the death toll is so high. The injuries are so high. A lot of people don't know whether their homes are still standing. So this is their first chance to go home and figure that out. And yeah, I think there's obviously going to be, you know, much longer term repercussions to what's happened.
The Lebanese army has told people not to go back to their villages until they're quite sure that the Israelis have removed themselves, because this is not an instantaneous withdrawal. It'll be a gradual withdrawal by the Israelis.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also fears of like explosives, of also white phosphorus, which we know Israel use. And when we were driving further south today, there were actually Lebanese army people handing out leaflets saying, do not touch anything. So, yeah, there's big concerns about security.
Now, the Israelis did continue to target some people. I mean, they say they fired at a suspected vehicle that contained Hezbollah commanders. And there are reports from Reuters this morning that the dead include two sons of former Hamas spokesperson Fawzi Barhoum. Have you heard anything of that?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the IDF statement, but I was in the southern suburbs, like pretty much until just now. There's actually no internet there. Like they've knocked down or they've destroyed even the phone lines, you know. So I wasn't keeping up to date completely with it. But I did think the fact that I couldn't even read the news from there was just showing again the scale of the destruction.
Yeah. And you would have been familiar with those southern suburbs from before the Israeli bombardment started. Just how extensive is the damage? How changed is the area?
Yeah, the damage is unbelievable. And like it's up until yesterday, like I saw buildings today that were still smoking. One road that we normally use to exit had been completely blocked off by rubble. People were just, standing around. I saw one family, which I thought was quite astonishing, standing on top of what used to be a 10-story building. And they were rooting through to try and find their clothes or like any belongings that still existed there. And yeah, I mean, it's huge. Like, and also the thing is, you know, it's not just the destroyed buildings, it's all the other buildings, whether they're actually stable, whether they are in, like, it possible to live in. And, you know, I talked to one guy, a 60-year-old, who was like saying that his family are going to move back today. He was like, yeah, we have no doors, no windows, but we're much better off than a lot of other people. So he doesn't see any obstruction to that. But yeah, other buildings, we just don't know, can they even stand?
And reading reports overnight of, one family heading back to their village, and they know that just before the truce came into effect, that the Israelis flattened half of it, you know, which seems like almost an act of revenge rather than something of military significance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not certain, but of course, there's like big questions to start. I don't know if the questions are going to be asked, to be honest, properly. But like, in terms of like allegations of war crimes, targeting of medics, targeting of civilian infrastructure, targeting of civilians, targeting of journalists as well. You know, there's a lot of belief here that there have been war crimes taking place that potentially now won't be answered for. And how people will move on from that, I guess, also needs to be seen.
Now, for Lebanon to move on, I mean, Lebanon is broke as a country. So the amount of reconstruction that is required, where is the money going to come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I talked to one family today who said that they believe that Hezbollah will rebuild their property. And I asked them when, and they said, we don't know, but that's our belief. And at the same stage, of course, yeah, where's that money going to come from? It's not totally clear. It's not clear how much Iran will contribute. I've spoken to people who say that they don't believe that they will necessarily want to fund that much. But I mean, it's not certain. One thing to say, I mean, people like Lebanese people are very resourceful. Obviously, it's not good to stereotype about everybody, but from what I've seen, people are getting back to business as soon as they possibly can. You know, they want to be working, they want to be supporting their families. And I even saw one guy selling Hezbollah flags today to people who were celebrating. And the man who was with me, who was from Dahiye, was like, look how business-minded people are. That's, you know, he's gone out on the street right after the ceasefire to do that. So,
and your level of confidence that this might hold, because part of this deal is the Israelis reserving the right, if they suspect there's anything untoward that might lead to an attack on northern Israel, they have the right to go in there and go in there hard, backed by the United States.
I mean, the people that I spoke to today, they said all of this is in Israel and the US's hands. Like, they want peace. But yeah, of course, there's this belief, you know, that and we talk about Hezbollah rockets, for example, but like the fact that Israel could strike anywhere at any time, like, that's very threatening for people here, you know. So, yeah, but what they're saying is it's in the hands of the US, the Western backers of Israel and Israel itself.
And the United Nations are going to be in the thick of it. The UNIFIL units are going to be part and parcel of this policing operation that will happen.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, Ireland has obviously played a significant role in Lebanon in the past and presumably will continue to do so. And yeah, I guess we can be proud of that.
Sally, thank you very much for joining us once again. That's Sally Hayden, Irish Times correspondent, currently living in Beirut. Paul Rogers listening to that conversation. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Pat. I'm afraid I missed a bit of it because of a fault on the line my end, but I caught most of what she was saying.
Well, no worries. I mean, the real question is this likely to last, or is this going to be another chapter in a sorry series of broken ceasefires?
I think it may last. I mean, it's a 60-day pause, in fact, but there's a fairly good chance on both sides. The Israelis undoubtedly did a lot of damage to the Hezbollah leadership, but in the process, 3,800 people have been killed in Lebanon and 15,000 wounded. And as I caught what Sally was saying about the huge economic costs. So as far as Hezbollah is concerned, they probably want time to regroup. The Israelis are saying they've been decimated. That isn't true. The Hezbollah fired a couple of hundred rockets just on Sunday. At the same time, the Israelis have achieved part of their aims, but it's been of considerable cost. And what they want to do now is try and rebuild their own forces. Basically, they do not have enough reservists to maintain the level of activity in Lebanon and in Gaza and the needs of the IDF from the occupied West Bank. So they want to pause for almost straightforward reasons. They can use their air power at any time. And this is why I think Netanyahu was saying, if there are any changes that they don't agree with, they will just go in and bomb first. But because each side has a reason to pause, I think they will pause. And of course, it will partly depend now on whether in some way Trump changes his attitude when he comes into power at the end of January.
So anyone who tries to read this as some sort of a victory for the Biden administration in securing this ceasefire, all they have to do is look at the duration of it, 60 days. How many days to Trump coming in? 60 days.
Well, that's the point. I mean, it's a huge amount will depend on what happens when Trump is inaugurated. It is probable that because he does tend to have these isolationist leanings, he will want to try and stay out of it if the pause is going to last. But of course, that does mean that even more what the Israelis are doing in Gaza and the West Bank comes to the fore. Netanyahu has increased his popularity in, the last month or two, surprisingly, given where he was just in the autumn. But at the same time, he may want to see a sort of even tougher line in Gaza and the West Bank, and then possibly go for an election. Because if he feels he can stay in power, which would be risky, he may well do that. The other factor, of course, that we're not sure of is what happens in relation to Israel and Iran. Iran does not want a war with Israel at the present time, but there are certainly people within Iran who want to see Iran try and make progress towards developing, at least theoretically, a nuclear weapons capability, because Iran in the final analysis wants its own kind of nuclear deterrent, however dodgy that term is, in relation to what Israel has. And it may be that, in fact, the Netanyahu administration would want to look again at whether they take any action against these Iranian nuclear facilities, which they've not done so far. That would be the dangerous escalation. I think it's unlikely if essentially Netanyahu is planning to call an election, because, of course, anything with Iran could go badly wrong pretty quickly.
Finally, I suppose Israel would say that they have won the war in Lebanon, they've won the war in Gaza, but they've lost the war for global public opinion.
I'd question whether they've even won either of the wars, because this is very short term. But yes, I mean, you have two situations here. Israel has lost hugely in terms of international opinion. I mean, it is pretty widely regarded as something of a rogue, a pariah state in countries that didn't hold that view before. That's the change. And one has to remember that the impact across the global south of the International Criminal Court actually bringing arrest charges against Netanyahu and the former Ministry of Defense is significant. It's significant in world terms, even if some countries, including the United States, would not pay any attention to it. Others would. And interestingly, even Britain, which I think surprised many people in Britain, the British government said that it too, it's implied at least, that it too would follow the procedures, which means that it would be very dangerous for Netanyahu to visit Britain at the moment. And that applies to many countries in Europe. People tend to forget that in the moment, but Israel has lost a huge amount. But it feels it can do this because it says it has no alternative. The big problem, which I think will not loom maybe for months or even years, is what Israel has done is produce tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of young people, most men on the Palestinian side, who are bitterly opposed to what Israel has done. And that, I'm afraid, is going to last a couple of generations. So, no, this war is not won. I'm afraid this is just going to be part of a long process until we get back to the fundamentals of some sort of lasting peace.
Paul Rogers, author and Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.